Hello and welcome to The Plotting Shed. You're listening to Rachel McCarty, founder of plantplots.com and author of the book I Want to Like My Garden. Each week, The Plotting Shed discusses different aspects of garden design, but we focus on things that other books don't really talk about. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and do please hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. Welcome back to what is going to be the final podcast in this little 12-part series of podcasts for this year. Once again, I'm afraid you're just going to have to listen to good old me because Helen is far too busy treating patients at the moment, but we will record a new series of podcasts for you focusing on lots of design tips and helpful and useful information to help you make your gardens better, to transform your gardens into a better place for 2022. So do tune back in the new year. I thought I would have a look at some of the proposed gardening trends for 2022 and also then just go through a few little interesting facts because plants are amazing. And when you start digging into the sorts of things that they do, you realise actually how intertwined we are with the natural world and plants, but we just don't consider it. So I just thought I'd run through a few little fun facts and information that you might know or you might not have been aware of, but they're really, really interesting. But anyway, what's going to happen in 2022? The general consensus for how horticulture and domestic gardening is going to change is a good one. A lot of the focus that I was reading about was putting the emphasis on the garden back on the individual, not in what you have, but it's something that Helen and I've talked about for years. It's how the garden makes you feel. And I think this will showcase itself in how gardens are going to be created and used in 2022. And I think you're going to see a lot more just natural shapes and using natural objects to create spaces to sit in or to be in. There's going to be less, should we say, man-made, artificially created spaces. It's more about if you were in your garden, for example, rather than think, oh, let's have a new decking area. It was, how can we create a nice seating area here? What would be nice for us to have around? What's nice to walk on? What would smell nice when we're sitting here? What can we create without spending a huge amount of money? And once we're there, how can we make that space feel the way that we want to feel? So do we need more lush planting to make us feel more private? Do we need more scented planting so that we can just close our eyes and relax? And I think that's the trend that gardening is going to be moving towards. And also, one of the common phrases, well, was this decluttering. Let's have what we need, not acquire what we don't. So it was very much less is more. There is now an acceptance that beautiful gardens and wonderful, healthy outdoor spaces can be created by anybody and everybody, because if it suits what you need it to do, then the garden works. What can I do to transform that garden and maximise its potential with the minimum input of resources? On top of that, I think there's going to be a trend now for bird envy and beetle and bug envy between neighbours, that there will be this social media explosion of, hey guys, look what I found in my garden. Look, there's a stag beetle. Look, I found these beetles. Look, I've attracted all these different types of insects and butterflies and birds and bats and moths, and people are photographing them and saying, look, this is what my garden is delivering. And I think that would be absolutely brilliant, you know, to have this competition as to who can create the most biodiverse garden. And that's what brings people the enjoyment. That's what will get people really fired up about gardening, because it's then part of us. It's the good that we can do. It's the small area outside our back doors that we can actually influence the world outside. The changes that horticulture and the gardening industry and the trends and the flower shows and everything is moving towards is really positive. It's really, really good. And it's easy for everyone to join in with. And that makes it even better. I think green is going to be the colour that is really, really popular next year. People want to reintroduce the greenery in their garden. It's less about the hard landscaping. It's all about the lush landscaping and re-energising that feeling of nature in your garden. But having said that, on just the purely the fashion note, apparently dark-leafed foliage is going to be in next year, and also really bright, happy flowers. So there you go, you heard it first from me. There is one shade of green that researchers discovered has a much more positive, uplifting effect on our mood because it reminds us of that fresh new spring growth of renewing and the warm sunshine, and it's that feel-good green. And what they've discovered is that is the colour of clover. That shade of green is the most positive, happy green for humans. So there's another thing you can do. I've always banged on about, you know, lawns being something that we don't need to have as being perfect. Well, if you let clover come into your lawn, you will have this swathe of happy green to make you feel better as well. But anyway, on to the next bit. I just thought, talking about green and clean and how beneficial foliage is. Last year, I wrote a post on the world's best air purifiers, and of course they're houseplants. And houseplant sales have gone through the roof in the last, well, 18 to 20 months, and hopefully will continue to do so because their purifying effect is so fantastic. So I thought I would just tell you the top five plants if you want to purify the air in your house, because plants are something like 1,000% better at carbon capture and removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere than anything we produce commercially or artificially. If you want to have nice, clean, fresh air in your house, then you need to have these plants. And I will put them on the show notes because my Latin might be a little suspect. The best oxygen producing plant is Pothos, which is Epipriminum aureum. God, that one's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? The second one, we all know this one, the peace lily. I think everyone has peace lilies in the house. Spathiphyllum wallisii. Then the areca palm is one of those bigger palms, the sort of parlour palms that you can kind of see. But that has the added benefit. Not only does it provide oxygen for the room, it also absorbs noxious chemicals. Dipsis lutescens is the plant that you need for that. Then the last two is the snake plant, which is also known as mother-in-law's tongue, which is Sansevieria trifasciata. God, I've told you, Latin is such a pain in the bottom to try and say, isn't it? But there we are. And then finally, another one that everyone has, which is the weeping fig, which is Ficus burgannii. But I will put all those names on them and so that you can see the links to the plants. But that will ensure that you have really, really good oxygenated, fresh, purified air in your house. So that's always worth knowing. But then, I said to you at the beginning, I would just give you a couple of little interesting facts that you might or might not have known about plants, because this is the last podcast in the series and I wanted it to be a little bit more lighthearted. Did you know that there is a wood wide web? Scientists have been researching this for years and years and years, but that they've discovered that trees and plants do communicate with each other via this wood wide web, this underground network of mycorrhizal fungi, which is like the internet cables between trees. Now, they're thinking, well, that's a load of, yes, fine, there might be some fungus that links trees, but it doesn't do much, but it does. So would it surprise you to know that plants can hear sounds, especially the sounds of insect munching? And they also do respond to human voices. So back in, I can remember back in the 1970s, Prince Charles was berated, castigated, and slightly made fun of because he said he used to walk around his greenhouse and talk to his plants as he was watering them and what have you. But actually, they do respond to human voices. They grow better. So if you chat to your plants, you're not totally bonkers. You're just tapping into something that they can pick up. But plants also can taste. Through their root systems, they taste the soil that they are growing in. And so, again, it makes you think that when you're putting plants in the ground or if you've put chemicals on the ground, you sit there thinking, well, what would I taste if my feet were in a bucket and I could taste all these noxious chemicals? Knowing that plants have this ability to sense danger, they can sense taste, they can hear sounds, makes you think, well, hang on, maybe I need to just consider how I'm treating my poor plants in a pot outside the back door. But also, it's not just plants, trees. They've now discovered that trees nurture their young. Again, through this mycorrhizal fungal woodwide web network. So the mummy tree, the big one that has set its seed, it can, via this network, absorb more sunlight and nutrients, and it farms that out through its fungal network to the baby trees, the new seedlings and saplings, to give them a little bit of extra food. And this is from a book by Peter Wohlleben called The Hidden Life of Trees, that these mummy trees can help protect and nurture the baby trees in order that they can grow and develop. They also send distress signals out. And I know this as well because I was reading, I think it's the acacia tree in Africa. When one acacia tree starts getting eaten by a giraffe, then it knows it's being eaten. And so it starts emitting some chemicals which change the taste of the leaves slightly, I think, so that the giraffes stop eating it. But those chemical signals waft from the tree on the breeze. So any tree further down the line will detect those chemicals in the air and start to produce those defense mechanism chemicals before the giraffes wander to their tree to start eating them as well. So it's really, really clever stuff. And then there are trees that suppress other trees by sending out toxic signals so that nothing else will grow within their vicinity to protect themselves. Black walnuts pump toxic chemicals into the ground, by the way, to sabotage the growth of other trees. So there's this whole system of interplay that we're just beginning to become really, really aware of. But it does make you think when you look out into your back garden that not only have we got our 4G internet, they've got their own woodwide web of information that flows underground as well. Another little snippet of utterly useless information, but it's always interesting to know, is how few plants we actually eat in relation to the number of plants that there are available. I was staggered because it said here, when I was looking, that there are 30 different plants that make up globally 90% of the human diet. I mean, that's bonkers, isn't it? But what was even more bonkers was that there are 80,000 plants that are actually safe for humans to eat. So we have a really, really narrow range of stuff that we eat. And there is this whole world of experience, it seems, that we possibly should try and tap ourselves into. But interestingly, where there's only 30 plants that we actually consume for most of our diet, when it comes to medicines, there are currently 70,000 plant species that we utilize or have utilized to make medicine. Now, that's an amazing fact, I thought, as to how important plants are to us without us really knowing it. And then I thought, you know, a couple of, they might never be useful bits of information for you, but you never know. You might be on a quiz show or something like that, and something like this might pop up and it could win you a load of money. So here's a few silly useful facts that you can squirrel away and then impress your friends with. If you can say this as well, by the way, and I'll come to that in a second. So what is the smallest flower in the world? And this flower is actually a third of a millimeter in diameter, and it's known as Pilea microphylla, but its common name is the artillery plant, and it's called that because it has such tiny flowers. It uses a mechanical mechanism to shoot the seeds out as far away from the plant as possible, which is why it's called the artillery flower. So there you are, Pilea microphylla is the world's smallest flower. But which plant has the smallest seeds? In fact, 1.25 million seeds per gram. And it's one of the largest plant species in the world. It's the orchid family. They have the smallest seeds in the world. And then finally, to finish off, before I wish you a very happy end of 2021, the world's longest plant name. Now, you're going to have to excuse me for this because this is 38 letters long. But the irony is, it's one of the world's most or smallest bulbs. I mean, the plant gets to 3 to 4 centimetres long. It's a desert flower in South Africa. But this plant now, it has the world's longest name. So it's, here we go, Ornithogalum ad septentrionis virgentulum. So there you go. I'm not going to say that again. I've had to write that out in very big letters so that I can try and phonetically say it. So it's probably rubbish in terms of my pronunciation. But that's it for this season. Thank you so much for listening to me. I really do appreciate it. As I said, we will be back in the spring next year with another series of The Plotting Shed. In the meantime, do please drop me a line, rachel@plantplots.com. You can put a message on the Plant Plots Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. Tell us what you would like us to talk about next year. Give us some, you know, if you've got some things that are really bugging you that you want us to investigate, then let me know. We'd love to hear from you. And in the meantime, have a very, very good end to 2021. We will see you in 2022. Stay well and enjoy your gardens. Bye for now. Well, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Rachel McCartane of The Plotting Shed. If you've got any questions about this podcast, please email me, rachel@plantplots.com, or you visit the website with loads of different information on garden design and gardening advice, along with planting plans that you can download. You can look at the designs that we've created. So do take a look, and please do hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. You can also donate if you go onto the website plantplots.com. There's a little button there saying you can buy me a coffee. So all donations will be hugely appreciated. Thank you very much. Enjoy your week, enjoy your garden, take care and stay well.